The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other hosts or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented by KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only.
Greetings, listeners and listener land. This is Arnold Stricker with Mark Langston of In Tune. In Tune's a two-hour weekly broadcast which focuses and reflects on issues that impact our community and the greater St. Louis area. Our topics include the arts, crime, education, employment, faith, finance, food, history, housing, humor, and justice. I'd like to introduce our guest, Jacqueline Thompson, and she is professor of acting and directing at the University of Missouri St. Louis, and she has returned to the Black Rep, has recently directed Four Little Girls, Birmingham 1963 at COCA, Ghost for Metro Theater. As an actor, she's performed with the Rep Theater of St. Louis, the Black Rep, Shakespeare Festival St. Louis, Upstream Mustard Seed, and the New Jewish Theater. In 2018 of March, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch recognized her as one of St. Louis's most versatile performers and recognized her as one of the six women shaping the arts and entertainment in St. Louis. Also in 2018, she received a St. Louis Theater Circle Award for Outstanding Actress in a Drama, as well as an Artist Fellowship from the Regional Arts Commission. And last year, she received a St. Louis Visionary Award. She's been here before, yes. So welcome back, Jacqueline. We're glad to have you here. I saw you as Ida on Into the Breaches, yes. The Shakespeare Festival. That was great.
That was a lot of fun.
Wow.
A lot of fun.
And you are going to be performing, you have been performing, mm-hmm. in the Choreopoem. Is it Choreopoem?
Choreopoem.
Choreopoem mm-hmm. by the author of For Colored Girls. That's Entezaki Shange.
Entezaki Shange.
Entezaki Shange.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I looked up Entezaki Shange's name in Zulu.
Okay.
And Mark, it means she who comes with her own things, yes. who walks like a lion.
Yes.
I wouldn't get near. Don't cross her.
I wouldn't be messing with her.
I love it.
Don't make her mad.
I wouldn't be messing with her. And I thought it was interesting about a choreopoem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a form of dramatic expression that combines poetry, dance, music, and song.
Yes.
And she kind of first coined the name in 1975 with her work For Colored Girls mm-hmm. Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough.
Yes.
So enough of what I'm talking about. Jacqueline, you tell us a little bit about what you're doing, and then we're going to get into the show that you're doing at the Black Rep.
Yeah, so
get us up to date.
What's been going on? I had the privilege of directing Polka Dots, the Cool Kid musical for the Repertory Theater's Imaginary Theater Company. They're touring all around the city and the state. I had the privilege of directing Ghosts for Metro Theater Company. They close on Sunday at 2 p.m. as our final show, so if you can come out and see that. It's an adaptation of Jason Reynolds' novel. He has a whole novel series of this track team, and Ghost is the first of those novels. So that's a show that's running. And I'm performing in Spell Number 7 at the Black Rep. So this year has been quite busy. We talked about, you know, needing to slow down a little bit. But
been a revolving door for you.
It has been, yeah.
And now the show that you did, Four Little Girls, that mm-hmm. you directed, Birmingham 1963, what was that about? And tell us a little bit about that production.
Birmingham 1963 is actually based on the 16th Street Church bombing that happened in 1963, and it follows the four little girls, like their everyday lives. It really shows the other side of, you know, what they liked, that they had crushes, and that, you know, what subjects they liked in school, and what their family was like, and how they were connected with their faith and church and the community. And it leads on up into that actual moment. We had 20 girls on stage.
Wow.
Age ranging from like 8 to maybe 16. And it was, you know, I knew it was going to be impactful. I wasn't prepared for the journey, but it was definitely an eye-open experience of like bridging generational differences. And there are things that, you know, I witnessed and I was taught at home in school, and things that I just saw that I knew that were very second nature to me. But in a new generation of young people, you know, having to go back and show documentaries and give them a lot of historical context, I didn't anticipate having to do as much of that. And it was great, but it was also just kind of like, it let me know how old I am. right? And it gave me fresh ways to bridge those gaps and bring them in and make them understand that, that it wasn't just a play, but it was also honoring the life and the legacy of these girls.
Mark?
I wonder, based upon what you said, educating kind of the cast,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How much education had to be done with the audience and like some of your notes for the production?
Yeah, I think we had a really strong representation of an intergenerational audience. We mm-hmm. had a lot of elders and a lot of, grandparents that came. And so it was a good mix. We did put some of that into the director's notes and things like that. And a lot of people came into the experience knowing a little bit about it, I believe. But it's still, people are, it's still very jarring to sit there and go on this journey and then remember that this is not just a play.
Right.
And that there are still lives and people affected by this to this day.
Do you think plays, and this is maybe a biased statement because I'm not as avid a theater goer as I know some people are, but do you feel that plays that have a basis in someone's life or in history have a little more impact than those that are what I would call more fiction, fictional based?
That's a good question. I think that they both can be impactful.
Mm-hmm.
I think, the beauty of theater is that it mirrors real life. And if it's mm-hmm. done well, then you're going to feel something. It's going to resonate somewhere in mm-hmm. you. And I think that, fictional or non-fictional, they all can be life-changing if they're done with heart and authenticity and passion to really tell that story.
So when you were putting that on and directing that, mm-hmm. How much prep time from, when did you choose the actors or was that, I just want to give our listeners a little bit of understanding about from the time that you say, I'm going to do this till the time of the first production, mm-hmm. how much time is that?
That's a good question. So I think we started rehearsals maybe late August. And I might have had auditions in the beginning of August.
Mm-hmm.
The really special thing about that play is that it only calls for a variety of actors.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got like over 20 girls.
Wow.
And I just made artistic decision. I said, this is about these girls. It's mm-hmm. about all of these girls on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so, keeping the integrity of the script, I still was able to use all girls. And so I just, I don't know if it was the teacher in me or whatever, all these kids need to be on the stage. So it made it, definitely more challenging with 20 girls on stage.
Yeah. But you can handle that. You taught first grade, right?
I did. You remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, I taught first grade. I taught fourth grade.
Yeah. If you can handle 20 first graders, you can.
I was in a charter school that didn't have recess at the time. This is early 2000s. And we were in a high-rise building. And it's so funny when you think of who you are at 20 and who I am now and how innovative I was, I think. I was we should do drama. They don't have, we don't have a playground. Let me do drama for K-5. And so this school had three or four kindergarten classrooms, three or four first grade classrooms. And so they would come to me they would come to gym or music, and I would do theater activities with them for a year too. So I did some crazy stuff. But
And that was an opportunity for those girls who maybe didn't have major speaking roles to be a part of that, to really experience what had happened.
Absolutely. To learn the history, to also get training in a professional space. I had an amazing assistant director, Alicia Light. She's a local actress, teaching artist, and she was, very good with helping me hone in on the specificity of things dialect. Mm-hmm. This happened in Birmingham. So,
right.
Working on that, and some of the girls had to change characters. So, body positioning from this and vocal differences from this, they did some work. They got some work put in. So I was really proud of
that.
That's
great.
Yeah.
So now you are currently performing in the production at the Black Rep.
Yeah.
And What tell us a little bit about that particular show and what people can expect with that.
Yeah, Spell Number 7 is a choreo poem, like you said before. And it's interesting because it intersects the voice of Black actors from that time, but also it's interesting to see how those same topics are relevant in 2020. So you kind of get an inside look at some of the mental psyche and different monologues that talk about where they are. And then there's also like this bar that's set in St. Louis, and they talk candidly about the roles that they are offered and the work that they want to do, as, you know, in contrast to the work that they're, you know, being given. And all these things kind of intertwine to create this piece. It's definitely an abstract piece. You know, the audience has to come in and be open to going on the journey. But if you can look at it in this abstract form and listen to the poetry, it's so much poetry. If you can go on that journey, then there's some discoveries that can be made.
And I'm sure some of this took place from Ntozake Shange's life, because she did spend some time in St. Louis as a youngster, like from age 8 to like age 13.
Absolutely. One of the things that I read for Color Girls when I was 18, I was on the campus of Clark Atlanta University. And, you know, I had never at that time read anything, any poetry, any book that like specifically said St. Louis names, mm-hmm. right? You know, mm-hmm. she talked about the Haudemont streetcar and talked about, you know, blues, like all these St. Louis references. So, and this is the same thing. She'll just drop certain street names or different things that, you know, that really make it special and personal for us.
Yeah, I remember riding the Haudemont streetcar as a child.
Wow.
I remember the last time when the streetcar stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to take the Haudemont streetcar up to the Del Mar Wabash station, which is at Del Mar and Haudemont.
Wow.
And which is where a Metrolink station is right now. And there used to be a White Castle there. And used to get some belly bombers there.
Wow.
I think it's a chiropractic or something right now. So
Bestie.
Back in the day.
See all that history.
So the role that you play mm-hmm. in this production, what is that?
Maxine. Maxine is an experienced actress in this bar. She's like one of the ones that's like working at the time. But she's still dealing with her own, you know, insecurities and still dealing with grappling with the roles that she wants versus the roles that, you know, she can get as well. There's one, like when she comes into the bar, I don't want to give too much away, but when she comes into the bar, one of the characters starts kind of doing a role play per se, and she kind of goes into it, and the thing she says at the end of it's like, I want to feel something like that. I want to do a role like that. When's the last time I got to feel? I got into this business to feel, and that's not what I'm doing right now. So it's really interesting to see the shift between, again, this world and this time. You know, this play takes place in the 70s. So a lot of the language is definitely, you know, for that particular time, but how much of it transfers to now.
I saw on the website, you know, adult language
absolutely,
and adult content.
Absolutely.
So probably not one for the elementary school kids, folks.
No, this is definitely for adults.
And we're going to talk more about this, but it started the run on February 19th and goes to March the 8th.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the Hotchner Studio Theater on Wash U campus.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if you want tickets, check www.theblackrep.org, or the box office is 314-534-3807. And Ron Himes is the director. And for those of you who don't know the Black Rep very well, it is one of the largest professional African-American theater companies in the nation and the largest one in the state of Missouri.
Absolutely.
So very, very good stuff. The main stage productions and the programs that they have done in outreach for education reach more than 80,000 people annually. So something to take note of. So when we come back, Jacqueline, what I'd like to talk about is, how do you see, in playing a character in that role of Spell Number 7 in that production, can you relate to some of the things that you will be saying
mm-hmm.
or that some of the other actors will be saying? And what have been some of those experiences? I'd like to give you a little bit of time to think about that
okay.
before you answer that. But folks, don't forget, we're talking about the Spell number 7, which is at the Black Rep. It's also the debut of rap artist Tef Poe. Mm-hmm. And he's received numerous hip-hop awards for his work and was featured as a Harvard Fellow at the W.E.B. Du Bois Research Institute. So something to take note of there. Very interesting. There's a narrator who kind of takes you through, Brian McKinley. Mm-hmm. And you want to try to get to see the show. Try to get to see that, because it's something that will probably not be back for a while.
Yeah.
So this is Arnold Stricker of In Tune. We're here with Mark Langston, and we're talking to Jacqueline Thompson, who is professor of directing and acting at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and we'll talk a little bit more about that also. But she has received numerous awards, and she's done a lot of acting and directing here in the area, most recently Four Little Girls, Birmingham, 1963 at COCA. This is Arnold Stricker with Mark Langston of In Tune. You're listening to KWRH 92.9 FM, your community radio station in Webster Groves, Missouri. Welcome back to In Tune. This is Arnold Stricker with Mark Langston. We've been talking to Jacqueline Thompson. She's starring in a... I say starring. You're starring.
Wow.
You're participating in a production, right. Spell number 7. She's got the lead billing going on there. I better not get you in trouble.
I know. Don't get me in trouble.
He gets everybody in trouble.
I'm just one of the actors in the ensemble.
She's an actor in the ensemble of the Black Rep production, which is the debut of Spell number 7, which has been written by a person who spent some time in St. Louis,
yeah.
Ntozake Shange.
Yeah.
And we were talking off air, and I wanted, and even prior to the break, I wanted Jacqueline to share some of the experiences that maybe she has had related to what the play is about.
Mm-hmm.
And again, refresh people maybe who are just kind of tuned in.
Yeah. So the play deals with stereotypes of Black actors in the 70s, and it's being done now to compare how those stereotypes and roles are prevalent or not prevalent now in 2020, and how it relates to my personal artistic journey. When I was in grad school, I wrote a one-woman piece, and it basically was called Steal My Class, Beat My Fill in the Blank, and Kill My Babies. And that's harsh, but I was doing all these roles where I was experiencing so much trauma, either, and literally, like, my children were being killed, or I was beat, I've been shot on stage, I've been raped on stage. Like, there's all this trauma. And again, if you are an artist that wants to dive in deep with whatever world you're playing, how do you let that go at the end of the night? That's 6 weeks of trauma. And not even thinking about whatever you have going on in your own life, right? And when I was younger, you know, I'm like, yeah, I want that role. Those are meaty roles. I want to do that. And as I got older, I'm like, who wants to live that every day for for 6 weeks?
Right.
3 weeks of rehearsal in 6 weeks. Who wants to, you know, snot and cry on stage every night?
Right.
And a lot of it is, I mean, there's some historical things that we have had to endure and play on stage. And it's always an honor to do those things, but it's also a burden. It's a task of having to carry that and leave that.
Give an example of that.
And I love For Colored Girls, Ntozake Shange, again, that choral poem changed my life. At the end of that piece, there's a lady in red. Her boyfriend drops her kids out of a window.
Mm.
There's another play I did where I was, again, shot on stage. There was another play I did years ago. It was, oh my goodness, all the plays are running together. It was I played a seamstress, and it wasn't Intimate Apparel because I did do that. But even with Intimate Apparel, which was, you know, that's the role I got the award in, this is a woman who basically gave her life savings to a man who left her.
Mm.
At the end of the play, she has nothing.
Mm.
She's left with nothing. She's 35-year-old woman. She wants love. This man starts writing her letters, and he moves to New York with her and takes her money and leaves.
Mm.
Right? So it's countless, over and over and over and over. And there's some miraculous stories along the way, but they're not easy to play. They're hard, they're complex. And again, if you're doing it right, you're going to find where you connect with that character. You're going to find where that character lives inside you. And then what do you do with it?
What do you do with it?
For me, you know, I had to, a long time ago, I had to come up with my own wellness practice of when you leave this stage, you leave this here. Mm-hmm. And I had to be very, when you step into off the stage, when you step into the dressing room, whether it's put on some music, whether it's yoga, whether it's meditate, whatever, like all of the above, I have to completely shut it out. But I have friends that don't do, I have some friends that, you know, I remember one time talking to a girlfriend and she was doing a play where her baby was killed in this play. And I was talking to her one night and she was like, I miss my baby. And I was like,
what are you talking
what
about?
You know, like, you know, just, you know, and she's talking about the play and it's like, you know, like that's not a healthy space to be in.
No.
And I'm sure she's not alone in that, that people carry that with them, you know?
Wow. I appreciate your transparency with that, because that, if you don't learn to separate that, it will separate you.
Absolutely. And I mean, we have countless examples of actors who, you know, go method, you know, or are not able to do that. And I mean, to be really transparent, that's why a lot of artists, you know, depend on alcohol or drugs or other things to completely zone out or escape from dealing with their own stuff and then taking on all these characters and all these roles and all this energy. People don't talk about that.
Have companies or theater groups, and it would probably be larger ones, mm-hmm. taken on when there's a play, performances that are going to be very stressful because mm-hmm. of the content, mm-hmm. because of the what's written, mm-hmm. that they'll bring in somebody to kind of, my words, deprogram, or a psychologist or psychiatrist to kind of sit with the actors and say, you want to talk to anything?
The closest thing you will have to that is a good director that is sensitive to the needs of their cast. And sometimes you have that, sometimes you don't. But, you know, and the thing about theater at the end of the day is a business too, right? So they're like, we got 3 weeks to get this thing up.
Right.
So companies that are mindful and sensitive to that will, again, put a director in leadership that will hold space for that, that understands that and will give, you know, time for actors to unpack all of the things that these plays bring up. But that's not always the case. So that's why it's so important to have a mindful, gracious, thoughtful, sensitive director.
Yeah, because you've done directing mm-hmm. and you've also done acting. Do you find sometimes you are helping young actors in a mentor kind of role as far as with what we're talking about? Hey, you need to have some kind of regimen or something that you're going to do?
As an actor, I only do that if asked, because I try to make sure always that I am in this capacity. Like, you know, my director brain is always on now, because mm-hmm. honestly, I do more directing now than I do acting. I haven't been on stage since Into the Breaches.
Okay.
But I've been directing constantly and acting is good. I try to at least act once a year just to keep that muscle memory going, and mm-hmm. also to remember, like, as a director, what I'm saying to these actors and mm-hmm. what lands, what doesn't land, like how long actors can go with until they're like just dragging and you're not getting any productivity because they're tired, you know. But I believe in staying in my lane as an actor, and it's completely, for me, unprofessional as an actor to another actor, even if they're younger than me or less experienced, to start giving notes that their director didn't give them. So I'm very mindful of, I'm here as an actor, that's what I'm going to be. Okay. You know, but yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. So any personal experiences that you can relate to that are talked about in the performance?
I think there's a monologue I do at the end. And this play is a lot like Shakespeare in the sense that you need to break it down and dissect and do your work. There's this 2-page monologue I do at the end where she talks about her mother and her grandmother sheltering her when she became a woman. And she calls it this condition, you know, and she has a line that says, it seemed like my mother and my grandmother were sending me out to be with trouble, but not get into trouble. And she referred to trouble as the young and handsome, and how the young and handsome, you know, later is trouble, but also, you know, eligible and interested. And so that was interesting to me. And it's funny because I find that a lot of times plays that I direct or act in, of course, they will always mirror some part of your real life if you're open to it. Mm-hmm. And I believe that they are sent to teach us things, to reveal things. And so it was really interesting every night when I'm saying that, of how that is parallel to my mother and my grandmother were very overprotective and sheltering, and how that applies with this character.
That's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So there's... again, how many actors on stage on this
particular? Oh, my goodness. 9 of us? Yeah. Yeah.
And there is, again, poetry and music?
Poetry, movement, some singing. But it's all, it's very much so that core poem word is very imperative to understand with this piece, because this is not a literal play. And if people are coming expect, you know, just a literal, this happens, then, you know. This is not that. It is very, again, abstract. Mm-hmm. And the stories move like a dance would move. And right, if you think that someone's leg's going this way, it might go that way. This spin is taking you this way. Oh, now it took you that way. It's a dance. Sometimes harsh, sometimes light, sometimes a ballet, sometimes this. But it is a dance, and you have to be ready for the ride.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And that takes place at the Black Rep at the A.E. Hotchner Theater, Studio Theater, on the campus of WashU. Tickets, again, at theblackrep.org. Call the box office 314-534-3807. So what do you miss about first grade?
Nothing.
First grade teaching.
I don't miss anything about
I miss the naps. Right. I used to have a nap.
I have a 4-year-old nephew that I take care of a lot. He's with me a lot. And so I get all of my young energy through him. I don't miss anything. You know what? No, that's not true. I miss the honesty of young people. My first graders, I mean, you know, whatever it is, if you look amazing, they're going to tell you. If you don't look good that day, they're going to tell you. They're going to tell you everything in the most purest, funniest, imaginative way. So I do miss that.
Yeah, they think sometimes if you're 25, they think you're 75.
Absolutely.
You know, that's always got a kick out of that.
Yeah. Even my nephew, even now, I had on something and he was like, I don't like that. I was like, you don't like my shirt? He's like, no, it calls me TT. No, TT, I don't like that. I'm like, okay, I need to go change.
Do you find a lot of interest at the university level with a freshman coming in and wanting to participate in plays or theater, or wanting to, you know, use that as a major?
Yeah, I do. And again, you know, unfortunately at UMSL, we don't have a theater program anymore. And I think that, and even now, the students that I have in my fundamentals of acting class and acting for camera, what I try to instill upon them is the dedication and the discipline. I think a lot of people want to act. A lot of people, you know, think that it's, I've had people say even, oh, that's an easy degree. I'm like, you have no idea of like the psychological and the historical context and the physical demands, the mental demands, you know. And then, you know, this is a career path that there is no blueprint. You can get an MFA, you can get a BFA, you can get whatever. And that still doesn't mean that you're going to be on Broadway, right? And also too, that's not everyone's level of success. I think the stereotypical thing is that is the pinnacle if you have a TV show or you're on Broadway, and there's so much other rich theater done regionally. Mm-hmm. There's so many markets, there's so many types of theater and so many other career paths and things to do. So success is, you know, can only be measured by that artist. But there is no one way to do it.
Right.
And I don't think all the time, sometimes they understand that you know, you don't get that, of course, at 18. You don't understand that at 18. So that's always kind of something
Looking for your Broadway break.
You want your Broadway break, you know, and yeah.
So how has the not having a theater department there, a drama department? What has that, done? What has that inhibited, and what has that opened?
Well, you know, and again, this is the first year. So the hope and the plan is that next year, at least we can get to a point where we're, you know, at least doing one production a year, some kind of way, and just finding resources to do that, because I do have students that are interested in performing. And, you know, again, even if it's just one show, something, at least they're still getting some kind of training and some type of foundational thing built with me. And I definitely send them out to audition in the community. So, you know, it frees up, I won't say frees up time for me, because there's still a lot of departmental duties I have, but I can definitely do more professionally because I don't have to do the shows at school. So professionally, you know, it gives some space, but for the students is definitely a deficit in their experience.
You know, I've always thought that, like, high school kids, you know, when they got rid of speech and debate, that was a bad thing. Because it really gives kids an opportunity to know and debate both sides of an issue, and you have to be prepared for both sides of the issue to explain that and to try to convince someone. I always thought, though, that what you're doing in some of the classes that you're doing would be good for everybody.
It's true. And, you know, one thing I ask students on the first day is, like, think about all the roles you play. You know, there is you're a role as a, you know, husband, daughter, cousin, nephew, aunt, whatever. Like, you know, when you go to work, those are different roles that you play. And how you handle yourself in those situations, how you present yourself to the world is very important. So it helps them a lot with their confidence. It helps them a lot with their public speaking. It helps them a lot communicate. I do a lot of ensemble team building stuff. So interacting, I'm like, my students are never like one of, you know, 30 or in a lecture hall. Like, they know each other. They know each other's names. And just taking time to be present with people. You know, even, you know, I have to check myself sometime, because even sometime in class, I see people doing this, you know, and
for those of you who don't have eyes for radio, she was looking at her cell phone. And
I did the text thing, right? Being present. I'm working on that. I'm sometimes terrible at that. Being present.
But you're not answering that while you're teaching it.
No, I'm not. I'm
it's a big difference.
Right. I know. But, you know, like, just, I don't know. You know, unplugging from Instagram and all the other TikToks and all the other stuff I don't understand. Snapchat and all the other.
It's a challenge.
That's why these conversations are, I think it's very important, like we're having right now. As you know, people can be driving right now. They could be, you know, washing the dishes. They could be maybe mowing the lawn, not right now, but doing things, physical things, or they could be, you know, just working, you know, and understanding that, you know, face-to-face conversations are huge.
They are. Know, how many times have you, I know, like, I went to a wedding not too long ago, and I was at a table, and everybody was at the table. I'm doing the phone thing again. Everybody was... Everybody was right here.
That's
like right here. We're at a reception.
What's
we're
like
eating? Like, can we look at each other? Can we talk?
We can, well, obviously they can't. It's like that commercial that, you know, it's for some Subway thing and some sandwich deal. It's not Subway, but so they're punching each other. And they're all in the same room, sitting like within 5 feet of each other. They texted each other that they want to go get a submarine sandwich.
Seriously, you know, it's kind of scary.
It's very scary.
Yeah.
We've been talking to Jacqueline Thompson. She is an actor in Spell Number 7. I was going to say she's starring in. She's an ensemble member of Spell Number 7, which is being performed at the Hotchner Studio Theater on the campus of Washington U. This is a Black Rep performance. Go to theblackrep.org for ticket information or call the box office at 314-534-3807. Jacqueline, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate it very much. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Come back.
Thanks.